You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 11th of January 2014 on Monocle 24. A look at some of the magazine big boys and some newer, more discreet titles. From Kowloon to Paris, we scoured the presses and we'll be seeing what's succeeding and maybe what's lacking when it comes to the newsstand. Some of the English-speaking world's most quintessentially lifestyle-orientated glossies are piled on our stack today, and we have a guest who can decipher what these and a host of other titles might be trying to achieve. And on this, Monocle's dedicated magazine and print industry review and analysis show, we like to keep a broad perspective. Tucked away amongst our stack is a new title from Paris that has its eyes set on global but local communities.
We only worked with people from Hong Kong, so all the photographers, the illustrators, the writers are from Hong Kong.
All that and plenty more besides on this 72nd edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House with me, Tom Edwards, for this edition of The Stack. Now, with the coming of the new year, we thought we would shake things up a little. We'll now be bringing you a slightly more refined show comprised of a half hour filled with magazine goodness. Today, we're delighted to welcome one of London's foremost magazine experts, Francine Lawrence. She's an art director, editor, writer, photographer with a wide range of experience in magazine and book publishing. She's art directed and edited several consumer magazines, including the award-winning Country Living, of which she was editor for 10 years. Francine's also a visiting lecturer in visual journalism at London's City University. Welcome, Francine, to the programme. A long list of accomplishments and achievements. It always intrigues me to these sort of multifaceted media talents. How do you see yourself in the world of magazines? Is it now as a sort of an educator of the next generation, as an editor? How would you sort of label yourself in a pithy phrase?
Oh, it's really difficult. You know, I was told by Deirdre McSharry, who was one of my mentors and a wonderful editor to work with, that you should be able to, at a cocktail party, be able to describe what you do in a couple of sentences or one sentence. I can't. I think probably the best way to describe myself is a magazine-aholic.
Good. We like those here on the stack.
But yes, I think because I have done quite a few things and started as a graphic designer, that's how I began, and went into magazines because I just loved playing with magazines and flicking through, looking at images. That's how I started. I'm very visual. And then I crossed the line and became an editor. I began at Country Living as the art director, and then the Deirdre McSharry left and I took over from her, which was, some big shoes to step into.
But, absolutely. It's interesting language, actually, you say about crossing the line. I know, sort of partially in jest, but do you think there is still a division in that way between the sort of the visual, the creative, and then the sort of editorial side of things? Do you think that it's a line that is increasingly blurred? Do you think maybe people should be more comfortable sort of crossing that divide, if indeed it really is one?
I think there was a time when you did cross the divide. You know, the art department, we're always those sort of, you know, we were art students. Hey, you know, in the days, you know, I'm shocked I don't smoke now, but in those days, we used to put our feet on the desk and smoke roll-ups, you know. Goodness knows how
we're
allowed
to. Art department upstairs, Francine, I think those days aren't so far behind as you might think at times. But it is interesting, isn't it, that some people may be a little uncomfortable with stepping across that divide. Do you think that you're sort of the ease with which you're able to do it has contributed to lots of the successes that you've enjoyed?
It definitely was a shocking move at that time. People said, people from art departments, they can't read, they can't write, you know, how can they possibly become editors? And I think it is a shame that more editors are not visual. And I do think, publishers out there, big companies, when you employ an editor, you really need to get somebody who does understand the way pages look. They need to understand typography. Or they have to have a really good relationship with their art director. And I do think that the relationship between an editor and an art director is rather like a marriage. There's got to be a lot of give and take. You've got to get on well. And you really, you know, have to understand each other and talk the same language. If you're fortunate enough to have an editor who is visual, usually that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, it intrigues me in terms of your lecturing work in visual journalism. Is it a helpful distinction, visual journalism, then? Because are not the disciplines, if you're talking about what makes a great magazine, of course it has to, you know, catch your attention on the newsstand. It is a visual medium in that sense. But for the next generation of editors, should it be a more holistic sort of approach? Or do you think it's helpful to sort of differentiate between, you know, the written word and the visual? They're all part of the same sort of thing, aren't they?
They absolutely are. And that's what I'm trying to do is with visual journalism, which is a sort of module that I created at City University, is to say to students of journalism who are there, probably they, you know, I teach on the MA course, so they've come with perhaps a history or a philosophy degree, but they haven't actually worked on the page. So they know about writing and about words, but they don't know the difference between a serif and a sans serif typeface. Often they don't understand what I'm saying when I say, hey, pull quotes and what about cropping this picture? That sounds terribly basic, but then we get it's quite exciting because magazines are very sensual objects. We like to touch them and feel them, and I think that when we choose a magazine to read, to buy, we're attracted by the way it looks far more than the way than what it says. I think you buy a newspaper because of the news in it and the type. Perhaps speaks to you, but a magazine, it's because of the way it looks. And this is what I try to get over to the students, and then it all starts working and blending together.
Oh, that's the idea, at least. That's Francine Lawrence, who's with me. We're going to delve through a stack of magazines a little later in the programme. In just a moment, though, we'll be going to Paris to talk about an exciting new title. Stay tuned. You're with The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. Now, as promised, it's off to Paris for a look at Pinalette, a beautifully produced independent magazine. This biannual publication takes a look at different regions of the world through the eyes of artists, activists and like-minded people. The first issue takes us to Hong Kong, where the editors met tailors, soap makers and traditional printmakers, amongst others. Our reporter, Claire Colcott, met the editor of Pinalette, Tim Kaplan, at a cafe in Paris.
Tim Kaplan, you are the editor of Pinalette. Now, your magazine is the product of a community of artists, but it also has a very special creative process. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, the process is interesting because we're not only making this magazine as a journalist, but more as a group of friends or a group of people. And what's interesting about this magazine is that we go in a city and we meet people that are interesting because they are creating stuff, and whatever they're making, they want to show something to their community.
So there's a sort of creative process in the articles. It's not just observation. How does that work?
Well, in fact, we started when we were in Hong Kong for this first issue. We met the first time. We met with a group of urban farmers and makers, and they're doing a lot of things, and they know everyone in the city. So it was quite easy for us to be introduced in the community of Hong Kong. They wanted to work with us. They were coming with us on the second and third interviews throughout the day when we were in Hong Kong. So they participate to this project as much as we do.
And the name of the magazine, Pinholette, what does that mean?
Well, it comes from this idea of the pinhole cameras. At the time when we were thinking about this project, we were kind of obsessed with pinhole cameras because there are fun ways of taking pictures, different ways of taking pictures. You can take pictures with anything and everything. The pinhole camera is also interesting because you're doing it all by yourself, and there's nothing you just don't buy it. You just take a piece of paper and you fold it, and that makes a camera. And the magazine is also like, maybe that's a bit the idea, yeah, to doing it yourself and making it by yourselves. And also the people we're interviewing are in this kind of spirit. these stories can only be told through print, because on the internet, maybe these stories, you could see them on the internet, but I, for example, I wouldn't read it because I don't know anything about Hong Kong, so I'm not going to click on this story and read it. Whereas in this magazine, it's just you pick it because maybe you're interested in the title, it looks curious, and then you're interested and inspired by all the stories that, whereas on the internet, you couldn't find them at all.
You also work with photographers and graphic designers. How did you create the magazine? I mean, in terms of design, all of that must have been a discovery for you.
Yeah, it was. Actually, we only worked with people from Hong Kong. So there's us in Paris, and after all this, all the photographers, the illustrators, the writers are from Hong Kong. So that was interesting because we only stayed there a month, and then after we were in Paris and we were just talking through mails and stuff, and they were taking pictures, they were making writing, illustrating, and that was really an interesting process to work with them, even though we're in Paris.
So can we open the book and can you show me a little bit, talk to me about it?
The first biggest feature in the magazine is this story, which is called Kings of Kowloon, which is about Michael Long and Martin Chong, who are making stuff in the Yau Ma Tei neighborhood of Hong Kong. One of the biggest features is also about the letterpress printing in China, because right now the letterpress printing industry is kind of having a new boom in Europe and in the States, but in China it's there's a demise that's quite sad actually, because there's only, I think, one or two presses in Hong Kong left. There may be one in Taiwan and none in China. So that's kind of the end of this industry. And we wanted to pay a tribute to this craftsmanship, which is really interesting process, because the Latin letterpress is already interesting because you have to use all these fonts and these metal types. But in China, it's really different because you have to cast a type for each character. So there are thousands, and this is really a difficult job.
I believe you have a playlist that's attached to the magazine. What is the playlist?
Yeah, the playlist is made to accompany the reading of the reader. So it's a total experience. You can flick through the music. There are also repurposed films and products from Hong Kong. So you can just dive into this community and this culture.
So what is the music? Is it local music?
Yeah, it's indie bands, and it's all about the scene that's going on in Hong Kong right now. There's a lovely group called My Little Airport, which are making beautiful music inspired by French pop. There are a group called the Marshmallow Kisses, which is about which is a group that's making bossa nova with it. But it's always funny music and easy listening music. It's quite popular, I think, but it's not really Chinese. It's more like a mix of influences.
That was our reporter Clea Corcott speaking to Tim Capelan, editor of the new title Pinolet in Paris. I'm with Francine here in the studio. Francine, this is a great opportunity for us to do our first impressions test, sort of, you know, live, as it were, because you have a copy of Pinolet there. We're hearing Tim talking to Clea a little bit about it. How would that one grab you? Would that sort of pass the Francine test on the newsstand? Or because it's quite discreet, it's a slightly smaller format. We should tell listeners, and it's a fairly discreetly styled. What do you make of it?
It is. It's probably not much bigger than A5, isn't it? It's not quite an A4. But what I like about it is it's got illustrations on the cover. I think it is almost a bit too discreet in a way. I think I would probably pick it up. I would definitely flick through it. It's got beautiful photography. I love the matte paper. It's got a lovely layout. And certainly, I love the fact that it uses illustration. One of the things that I think is really important in magazines is pace. Mm-hmm. And I really want magazines to surprise me. It's beautiful. It's quite safe. That's my feeling about it.
Interesting, because it sort of builds itself as this sort of collection of, you know, smaller ideas. So, yes. But maybe there's an issue there, perhaps, with the sort of, you know, the scope of the ambition. And if you sort of sell yourself as a small ideas title, it can be more difficult to grab people and to grip and keep their attention, I guess.
I think so. I think I want more drama in it. One of the things that I love to see is when you blow up a detail across a double page spread. And that's what I'd like to see. I can't fault the photography. It is beautiful. It's artistic. It's lovely. I just want a bit more excitement.
More energy. And if it's focusing on a city like Hong Kong, that's, you know, so rich. There's yes. such kind of scale of ideas and of colour and of imagery there. You'd think they could, perhaps reflect that a bit more. Interesting to get your take. Interesting stuff, probably guaranteed, because we're going to delve into your stack of magazines here on The Stack on Monocle 24 just after this.
If you're after a soundtrack to your working day, look no further than Monocle 24's Globally Minded playlist. We play the very best upbeat music from around the world, around the clock. Whether that's jazz from Japan, pop from Paris, house from Hamburg, or soul from Seoul. It's all picked by our team and presented by our editors. So get lost in music with Monocle 24's playlist right here, day and night, on Monocle 24.
You're with The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, here at Midori House in London today. I'm with a veteran creative director and all-round magazine maestro. Fair enough. That's what you said. Francine Lawrence. It's time to delve into the stack of magazines Francine has brought with her today. Now, we always say people have brought a stack of magazines. Francine, you have truly delivered. This is an impressive array of titles. I almost don't know where to start. Perhaps you should begin. Where should we start our run-through of the many options that you have before you today?
Well, perhaps I should talk about the theme, because obviously I could have brought anything at all. I thought it's January, it's cold. I'm thinking about the new year. So I wanted to look for magazines that made me feel creative. I kind of, you know, had enough of the big high consumerism of the past, you know, couple of months where all the magazines were trying to make me buy the latest this and that and spend money. So I wanted something creative. So I picked up one of my all-time favourites, which is Selvage magazine, which is a magazine. It's a grown-up magazine, I like to call it. It's about, as the name you know, implies, Selvage. It's about fabric. It's about textiles and textures. And it always has wonderful stories about people working with cloth or weaving. It has threads and cottons and notions. And there are fetishes out there who love fabrics. And this actually satisfies their addiction.
It's interesting, isn't it, leafing through the pages of a magazine like Selvage, that exactly what we were talking about before, about, you know, perhaps not the failings of digital, but where it can struggle to live up to the printed page, because you do almost feel that you're touching these fabrics when you feel the paper in your hands, don't you?
Absolutely. I don't think that you could get the same experience digitally with Selvage. You need to really turn the pages and feel the pictures. And it has got some lovely stories. One of my favourites in here is a story about Butterick and McCall's patterns, the dress patterns that our mothers and grandmothers used to use. And it's got the most gorgeous illustrations. And I love that feeling of history. Selvage always brings a feeling of what's gone before. And I think all fashion designers ought to look at Selvage and get a feeling of history, of where the designs come from, and use it as inspiration.
And it's quite a skill, isn't it, to be at once very contemporary and very clear-sighted, but to have, it's not even just a nod to history, it's to really bring that onto the page, but to retain that sort of cutting edge. It's quite a skill, and they'd certainly pull it off, don't they, with a great deal of skill.
Yes, it could be a sad old ladies magazine, but it certainly isn't.
So that's your first stop. Let's continue on this little journey then. Where next? Should we go for something maybe decidedly a little old school, or have you got some other contemporary tricks up your sleeve?
Old school. Where should we go? Certainly one of the magazines that I absolutely love, and is a magazine that I pick up if I'm going on a plane journey, is National Geographic. Just because, again, it's not trying to sell me something. It's certainly talking about foreign places, but not in a kind of let's go to a five-star resort and spend lots of money. This is, and it's a magazine that makes me feel happy whenever I see that yellow edge.
Well, I was about to say, in fact, it's amazing how often the National Geographic, you'll just see peeping out from beneath or amongst the stacks of magazines that distinctive yellow border. And it does seem to speak to all sorts of magazine aficionados, whether they're publishing a new zine and it's very, you know, contemporary, you know, or yeah, very old school. It appeals to everyone. And that's quite a trick as well, to have such a universal appeal. I mean, what do you think the tricks are, leafing through this issue you have before you, for example? Is it simply that it's, you know, incredible photography of scenes that, you know, most of us will be fortunate if we ever see, you know, 1% of in the world? What's the secret that makes it work so well?
I think it is the absolute beauty of the photography. And, of course, you know, when I'm talking to my students or going into a magazine company who might be launching a new magazine or have a magazine that's in trouble, we always talk about profiling the reader. I always think it's terribly important to have a real picture of your reader. However, National Geographic is the exception to the rule, because National Geographic appeals to people, you know, who, you know, in their gap year travelling around, or to grandparents who, you know, are sitting in their armchairs. It's just a beautiful magazine. I love the fact that it has colour. Look at this gorgeous feature about the Caiapó, I think that's how you pronounce it, of Brazil, with these fabulous headdresses made out of bright coloured feathers. And as soon as you look at these images, which are a little bit Irving Penn-like in their approach of these tribes people with these headdresses and face painting, you just feel happy. You feel happy because the colour makes you feel good, the quality of the photography, and the fact that these people still exist. So you get a little bit of the politics and the culture in there as well. So, yes, you can't say it absolutely crosses all divides. It's not an all-female magazine, not all-male, and it's really any age, which is very unusual these days.
Absolutely. And I think one other thing, it intrigues me when you perhaps talk to your students, for example, about this, about the perils of, you know, change, too much change, or sometimes change for change's sake, which we occasionally see in the magazine world, as we do across all media. Something like National Geographic, which sort of resolutely sticks to its guns, it evolves gradually, but there's not a great deal of change. Now, some people would say, well, of course, one must guard against, you know, complacency and just sticking to ideas because, you know, they're successful. But it's reassuring in some ways, isn't it, that not just the creative talents behind the magazine, but also the readers are actually happy often to continue it in a similar vein. They don't need lots of bells and whistles. You can just deliver, you know, pretty consistent excellence. And often that's reassuringly enough.
I'm so glad that it still exists. And, you know, I hope this is a commercial for everyone to keep buying National Geographic, because probably you could pick up a copy from, you know, 1940 and 1960 and it wouldn't be terribly different. But we've got to keep it going. We must have magazines like National Geographic. And this is another case for print in that, you know, it still has the wonderful gatefolds inside it, which I love.
And for a lepidopterist like myself, that one in particular is very,
yes,
very arresting.
Beautiful butterflies.
Beautiful butterflies there.
Stunning.
Francine, let's continue on then. Where shall we turn next, do you think?
Okay, so we've had this appeal to the explorer in me. Where should we go next? Shall we go to the south of France?
Oh, why not? Always a good idea when it's rather inclement here in London.
I love this magazine, and I'm going to embarrass myself. I think it's Côté Sud. It's a French magazine, and every time I pick it up, I'm transported to this world of people that live in the south of France, where the sun shines every single day. Everybody eats on beautiful laid out tables that nobody seems to have white plates. They're all green and the glasses are coloured, but somehow it works and it's just so beautiful. It really transports me to the south of France. I love it and I get inspiration, I get ideas. This is a stunning magazine. I have copies of it going back 15 years, and I still use them as inspiration.
Well, unsurprisingly, perhaps, because you look at these images, sort of lovely fall bleed images, lots of rich colour, and as you said, the warmth of the coast there almost that sort of radiates off the page. Let's include maybe just one quick last magazine as we wrap up, or maybe have you got any other little themes, or do you want to talk about a couple together very briefly?
Can I talk about two?
Yeah, let's. let's do that. What have you got there?
Okay, I have two magazines here that are very similar. One is called Another Escape. It's I looked on the website to see where it's published. I think it's English, and it's a stunning magazine. It's perhaps quite similar to Pin Olé, the one that we were talking about earlier, but I think it works far better. And it has lovely photography, beautiful paper, some stunning features about colour. It's got something about woad, which is rather like indigo. It's a very beautiful magazine that transports you to another place, and Another Escape is a lovely title. And very similar to that, and perhaps was the inspiration for that magazine, is a magazine called Smith Journal, which is an Australian title. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Well, it's another Smith Journal is another one that seems to unite magazine lovers all around the world. So it crops up on the stack every now and again. But as you said, it does certainly, you can see how it and Another Escape are, you know, bedfellows of a particular sort of style.
I think this is a really fabulous magazine. It's obviously aimed at men, but it has, you know, it's got features about beer and salami and bullfighting and maps, but it's also a real magazine for magazine nerds. It's so beautifully designed. Even the crossword is a stunning,
that's
unusual
a sort of a,
design.
How would you describe that? A beautiful sort of geometric masterpiece, isn't it? There, it looks like a piece of like a Bridget Riley artwork or something.
It is a piece of art, and it makes you not want to fill in the squares because it's too beautiful. It also has a pull-out poster on punctuation and proofreading symbols. So it really is for magazine nerds like me.
Aficionado. Well, that's one to keep the sub-editors happy as well. That's a great place to finish. Francine Lawrence, thanks very much for being our special guest here on this edition 72 of The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Special thanks, as I say, to Francine. Our producer today was David Pleasant. Behind the glass here at Midori House was our studio manager, Toby Hammond. If you have any comments or queries, do drop us a note. We're at info@monocle.com. And remember to return next Saturday when we'll be back at the very same time. In the meantime, you can listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, from me, Tom Edwards. Until next time, it's goodbye.